So it's my pleasure to welcome Azadeh Meleknejat, who is visiting us from Max Planck Institute for Astrophysics in Garching, Germany. So Azadeh did her PhD at Sharif University and Al-Azhar University in Tehran in 2012. And then she's been a postdoctoral researcher at TF Tehran from 2012 to 2015, and then a visiting scientist at Stanford. And after that, a postdoctoral researcher at MPA, Max Planck Institute, where she's been since. So Azadeh has done a lot of interesting work in integrating early universe cosmology and high energy physics theories. Most significantly, most famously, she's applied gauge fields in inflation or gauge field driven inflation. And she's, as well as other important work, and now, in fact, she's extending that to dark matter and leptogenesis. So that's a very influential work, and she's going to tell us a little bit about that.
Thank you very much.
So I have a microphone.
So I can do that.
So
yes.
Can you hear me now?
Okay.
This is being recorded, just in case.
So I cannot say something crazy.
You can.
So good morning, everyone. Thank you very much for making me feel so warmly welcome. It's my pleasure to be here today at Perimeter Institute and tell you about primordial SU2 gauge fields, which can lead to a new paradigm for particle cosmology. As Niyesh kindly mentioned, that's a topic that I started almost 9 years ago until then, and it kept making me and many others excited and attracted, and here I am to share some of those excitements with you. So, I divided this talk into two main parts. The first part is about motivation, so it's going to be fun. The second, so first I will tell you why gauge fields, why SU2 in inflation, and then the new window of opportunities that this extra SU2 will bring to physics of inflation and particle cosmology. The second part is about details, so I personally hate it. It's about SU2 axion model building, so about the model building of the whole class of models, and also about the details of the particle production in inflation in the presence of this background gauge field. So why gauge fields, why SU2? Why not? So we know that inflation happened when the energy scale of the universe was at its highest energy scales possibly observable for us. And also gauge fields are all over the place in physics and the building block for particle physics, either standard model and beyond. So what do they do in inflation? Can they actually contribute to physics of inflation? That's a question that at first it might seem impossible, like obviously impossible, because it automatically comes with three main challenges. The first issue is about the conformal symmetry of the Yang-Mills theory, which is the main theory for any gauge fields. And the conformal symmetry makes the gauge field in the FRW background to act like 1 over the scale factor. During inflation, it means exponential decay. So if gauge fields can possibly contribute to physics of inflation, conformal symmetry must be broken. But we are not free to break it however we want because we need to respect the gauge symmetry. The common solution for both of these issues is to add extra gauge invariant terms in the action of our gauge theory that can break the conformal symmetry so the gauge field can have an almost constant energy density during inflation. This is the effective action that we added to the Yang-Mills theory, and for the first time we proved the possibility of this mechanism. And if you look closely, you will see that it has the equation of state of cosmological constant. So it means that if this term is dominant over Yang means, you have a gauge field, we have an almost constant energy density. But at some points that the Yang means get dominated, inflation will end with radiation domination. And this term is nothing but coming from the very familiar Chern-Simons interaction between an axion and the gauge fields once you integrate out the massive axion.
Sorry, how can you see this is a cosmological constant?
Uh-huh, good question. The thing is that this FF dual doesn't have any metric. So FF dual itself is a topological term. So once you add another FF dual, it acts like one over, somehow it removes a whole metric term. And if you compute it, you will see that it's like a rho, which is exactly minus P.
Okay.
The thing is that the existence of the Yang means makes that to have some time dependency, but if you just remove the Yang means, it's exactly like a constant.
So, but the...
And it does have a kinetic then.
Yes.
And it's more like English.
Yeah. So that's we need the Yang means theory to provide the kinetic term, yeah. So up to here, we realized that gauge field can actually contribute to physics of inflation if they have the right theory. But then it leads to the third issue, which is about the spatial isotropy and homogeneity of the FRW metric. We know that once we have a vector field, like a U1 gauge field, and you turn on a homogeneous solution for that, it will automatically and immediately break the spatial isotropy because it is a specified a preferred direction in this space. And on the rotation, of course, it will rotate like a vector. It turns out that if instead of a U1 gauge field, we have a SU2 gauge field, which is now three gauge fields, and they are not commuting with each other, but satisfying the SU2 algebra, it can actually have a field configuration, which is spatially isotropic. And the story is that still under rotation, it will transform like a, under a rotation, it will act like a vector, so it will transform. But as a gauge field, it also specified up to gauge transformation. And thanks to the isomorphy between SO3, which is the algebra of rotations, and SU2, which is the internal symmetry of this gauge field, this isotropic field configuration is possible. In the second part, in details, I will tell you more about the this field configuration. So up to now, we realized that a non-Abelian gauge field can actually contribute to physics of inflation while respecting the spatial isotropy. And as a result, a new class of inflationary models has been introduced that have a SU2 gauge field and axion, so we call it SU2 axion models. But it was not the only surprising result, because soon we realized that this class of models has a very rich and multifaceted phenomenology that leads to a new window to particle cosmology, and among everything, several other things, it predicts chiral gravitational waves, which is non-Gaussian and can act like a fingerprint of these models to be observable. Oh, a new window to particle cosmology, what does that mean? We know that the standard model of particle physics is perhaps the most precise theory that physics in the whole history of physics. But yet, when it meets cosmology and astrophysics, it's ridiculously incomplete. Among different challenges of modern cosmology and particle physics are, of course, the origin of the matter asymmetry, the particle nature of dark matter, and the primordial gravitational waves as the only missing prediction of inflation. On the other hand, fundamental discrete symmetries of nature and their violation had key roles so far in understanding of physics around us, like P and CP violation in formulating the weak interaction and CP violation to understand the matter asymmetry in the universe. And if you think about it, the most natural place for CP to be spontaneously broken is inflation. Otherwise, if it happened afterward, it will suffer from domain wall problem. Yet, it's mostly assumed that physics of inflation is P and CP symmetric. This new class of models that I'm talking about, SU2 axion inflation, in their background, they spontaneously breaks both parity and CP and can relate all of the seemingly unrelated phenomena in early and late cosmology. To have just a taste of what is the form of this, this models is, without going into details, let me show you gauge inflation, in which this is the action that by that we showed and proved the possibility of this mechanism. This is the standard Einstein gravity, and then we have the Yang-Mills theory, and the pink term is the one that acts like a... So in case that it gets dominant, it acts like a very flat potential for the gauge field. And it's simply an effective field theory coming out of integrating out a bigger theory. So if you have a normal axion, and which is coupled with the gauge field, and then you integrate out the massive axion, you will end up having this theory. Inspired by these two models, several other realizations of this setup has been introduced and studied in the literature. So although in detail they are different, but because they share this non-trivial SU2 gauge field, which has a background during inflation, they shared some key features.
Sorry, question.
Yeah.
People looked at like higher order gauge theories like SU3 and SUN in general?
That's a very natural question. Of course, because what I need here is just SU2. Any SUN has the subsector of SU2. So in principle, it can be generalized to any of them. I don't know any example that people has been studied that. For the background, it's very like, is it straightforward to do that because you just need to sit in the SU2 subsector. But when you turn on the perturbation, it will add zillions of new degrees of freedom, so it can be more complicated. Okay, since the background has a key role in this non-trivial structure, let us take a closer look. Here we have both the axion and the SU2 gauge field, and both of them has vacuum expectation values non-zero during inflation, which breaks parity and CP. Here in this illustration, I have the vacuum expectation value of the axion and the SU2 gauge field. So for any slow roll trajectory, let's say A, there is a parity conjugated version of that, AP, which are physically different because they are both of the fields are odd under parity. The background cosmology and a scalar fields that is coupled to this background, they are not sensitive to this structure, so they won't notice. But particles with spin like fermions and spin 2 particles like gravitational waves are sensitive to this non-trivial vacuum structure during inflation. And as a result, it can lead to particle production during inflation. So I'm talking about the particles that are producing exactly during inflation, not after inflation, because normally particle production is happening during reheating. So that's why I emphasize the pre-hot Big Bang particle production, which is the feature of the setup. So as we know, vacuum is just this vast ocean of virtual particles which are getting generated and annihilated very fastly all the time. And if we have a background field which is strong enough, it can upgrade this virtual particles into actual particles. This background field can be a normal gauge field like an electric field. It can be the expansion of the universe, or it can be the gravitational field around the horizon of a black hole. In a specific case that this background field is a electric field, we call it the Schwinger effect. which is a very interesting phenomenon. Unfortunately, in the flat space, it has never been observed because it requires a very large electric field, more than around 10 to 18 volts per meter. However, in physics of inflation, that the energy scales are very high, and when we have a background gauge field like our setup, Schwinger effect can be important. So we have particle production during inflation, and it will leave observable effects. So here I summarized the big picture of what's going on in the setup. Here we have a vacuum that breaks parity and CP in physics of inflation. Here we have the particle productions because of this background. And this is the observable features as a result of the particle production and the presence of the SU2 gauge field. So now in the next slide, I'm going to divide it into two parts. First, I will tell you about the right-hand side, and then I will tell you about the left-hand side. Up to here, I just told you about the background gauge field, but when you turn on the fluctuation, the SU2 gauge field will have some scalar, vector, and tensor fluctuation, and that's quite unique because the perturb gauge field has an extra spin 2 degree of freedom, which I call it Bij. And because of the parity violation in the background, this B particle is chiral. So if you expand it in terms of the helicity state, the plus and minus helicity states are not equal. And what makes it even more interesting, the B field, the extra spin 2, is linearly coupled to gravitational waves. So normally in inflation, what we have is just box of H equals 0. So the right-hand side of this equation is just 0. The solution we know is H vacuum solution and is unpolarized because it's just vacuum fluctuations. But now that we have this extra spin 2 degree of freedom, the right-hand side is not 0 anymore and is highly chiral. So in addition to the vacuum solution, we have this source part, which is chiral and also uncorrelated with the vacuum solution. Interestingly, since the source part is chiral and non-Gaussian, it leads to new observable features on CMB, and in principle, it leads to, so it can produce parity odd correlations on CMB like EB and TB, which are now non-zero. And because of its non-Gaussian nature, it can be probed by future CMB missions like LIGHTER. In addition to that, because that all of the Sakharov conditions are satisfied in the setup, they can also work as a setting for inflationary leptogenesis. And the reason is that we have chiral gravity waves, so RR tilde is not zero, and through the standard model gravitational anomaly, it can generate leptons during inflation that can eventually, after inflation with Svalorin process, convert to baryons and explain the matter asymmetry in the universe. So now I'm going to tell you about the right-hand side of the big picture. We are talking about this other degrees of freedom, which can be coupled and charged under the SU2 gauge field, which is a scalar doublet and dark fermions. And both of them, they can get generated by the Schwinger effect, and they can also back react to the background as well if we have overgeneration of that. And interestingly, you know that in inflation, if you don't have any source for fermions, fermions will just decay. You cannot generate fermions during inflation. But in this setup, we have a source of CP violation, which is almost constant during inflation. And it keeps forcing massive fermions during inflation and breaks their conformal symmetry. So they can get generated during inflation. And as a result, it leads to a new non-thermal mechanism for generating dark fermions during inflation. So I'm talking about dark fermions, which are charged under this extra SU2 gauge field. And in case that you assume that these dark fermions are stable, they can make part of the dark matter that we observe today. No questions? Am I going too fast?
Are these all UV effects when they get to IR scale? Do they all these sources go away or do they?
So I'm talking about the background gauge field. And it just sourced the particles. So no, it's not a UV effect. It's just pair production. Am I missing your question?
Like for example, like curvature perturbations, everything outside the horizon, everything is conserved.
Oh, very good question. The thing is that for the B particle, I think it's better if I explain that in the second part, which is about the details. But if I miss that, then please ask me again.
So if you have an active source for stable fermions that you want to be dark matter during inflation, why do they not get diluted to the, why do they not get diluted? Why they would be observable today in any appreciable number density?
Uh-huh. So the thing is that the gauge field, the background gauge field, keeps sourcing this fermion, so they also have an almost constant energy density. The axion was the source that keep the gauge field to carry the gauge field and broke its conformal symmetry. The same thing is happening for the fermions. So normally, in the absence of this interaction with the gauge field, they would just decay like 1/a cubed, and inflation to just go away. But because of this extra interaction, their energy density is almost constant. But after inflation, that the source diluted, they just get back to their normal life, so they're just decaying like normal matter. Does that answer your question?
Your axion decay constant, is it above the inflation scale?
I'm sorry?
Is your axion decay constant, is it higher than the inflation scale? Like your Peltier-Quinn, the phase transition, is it happening before inflation?
I don't have any phase transition here. My gauge fields are, so in this very simple scenario, I have a gauge field which remains almost always massless. But in principle, you can have like a dark Higgs that can make it massive, and at some point it breaks.
She's asking about the axion bit. So
yes.
The field that you integrated out. So what
right.
is the F? I think that's
yeah.
what
she's
asking.
Oh, sorry.
The reason why I was asking is because the FF tilde squared itself is CP even, and originally the CP odd term would be before the phase transition, right? So if you have the axion multiplied by FF tilde is CP odd, but as soon as you pass the phase transition, you're relaxing to the CP conserving state, which is the axiom solution.
So if you're
wondering if this is happening before inflation, then I wouldn't see how we get CP violation in the system, but maybe it's happening afterwards.
So I'm talking about spontaneously broken CP. And the thing is that parity is broken, and if I have a charge-conserving fermion setup, then it will break the CP as a result. So imagine that I have this dark fermions, and it's C-symmetric, but because I have parity violation, it leads to a CP violation. So I have a non-zero J mu 5, while J mu, net J mu, is zero. But if your question is about the decay constant of the axion, it's normally depend on the model, but it's something around 10 minus 1, 10 minus 2 m pi.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
So now I'm going to tell you about the part two, which is about the details. So it's about the model building of this SU to axion setups, and then finally about the details of the particle production in inflation. So let me first tell you how we restore the spatial isotropy although we have a vector field in the background. So once we turn on a normal U1 gauge field in our background and we assume it to be a homogeneous configuration, I would have only one vector field and it breaks the spatialized entropy because under rotation it will rotate like a vector. What is happening when I have a SU2 gauge field, something with this, this form, and this TA is just the SU2 generators? The thing is that, so first of all, I'm in the temporal gauge, so the A0 is just zero. That's why my gauge field just carry the spatial index. When I have a SU2 gauge field and I fix the temporal gauge, it fixed the gauge field up to some residual time-independent gauge transformations, but still it's a vector field, so under rotation it will rotate. I have three gauge fields which are rotating like normal vectors under rotation, but because of the SU2 index that they carried, and still, although I'm in the temporal gauge, there are this residual SU2 gauge transformation. Their structure is exactly like the rotations themselves. So there is a configuration in which you can identify the SU2 index and SO3 index and find this field configuration for which the energy momentum tensor is perfectly isotropy and homogeneous. So that's the actually the main magic is about the isomorphy of SO3 and SU2 algebra. Okay, in the previous part, I told you about the basic setup and this scenarios, which is axions and gauge fields coupled with each other. And I told you that there are very different realizations of this setup. It's a very incomplete list of the models so far in the literature, but collectively, I can explain all of them in this form. So SA is basically just the gauge field and the axion, normally something like the models that I showed before. But then based on the fact that the gauge field is massless or massive, I can have this Higgs sector as well, which can give a mass to the gauge field. And also the axion itself can be the euphoton, so this alpha S can be zero, or it can the SU2 axion sector can be a spectator. So the inflaton is this extra term here, SS, which is just a normal scalar inflation. They look like very different because you can basically cook very different realization at the setup, but they share the interesting feature because the interesting part is about this extra SU2 gauge field. So they have a SU2 gauge field vacuum expectation, which is isotropic and homogeneous. And parity is broken in inflation because my gauge field and this psi here is basically the effective field that that describe a gauge field. So it has a parity odd nature. And also the axion itself, so parity is broken in the setup. And also I have a new spin 2 degrees of freedom, so if I perturb the gauge field on the top of new scalar and vector degrees of freedom, I have a spin 2 field, which is linearly coupled to gravitational waves and can make chiral non-Gaussian primordial gravity waves. And these are basically in common with all of the different realization of SU2 gauge fields in inflation. Up to here, I just assume that there is this, I just emphasize the existence of this isotropic field configuration for the gauge field, but we are talking about gauge fields and it's very natural to ask if this initially isotropic field configuration is stable against deviations from perfect isotropy. Because in principle, for example, my spacetime instead of an isotropic FRW can be Bianchi, in which the expansion rate in this direction is different than the expansion rate in this direction. And then the question is, now that I have gauge field, would that lead to an isotropic background, or what would happen? Because if that leads to an isotropic background, then this assumption would not be a natural thing to assume. Interestingly, the isotropic solution is the attractor. So even if I start slightly away from a perfect isotropic background, in which the metric is a Bianchi metric, and also the gauge field is not exactly isotropic configuration, it will always end up with the perfectly isotropic field configuration. So this setup can only have isotropic inflation. Now it leads me to the particle production in the setup. The first particles that I'm going to tell you about is the new spin 2. So the perturbed spin 2 degree of freedom in the gauge field, I show it with pink, Bij, and it's this field equation. Don't worry, it looks messy. But the only thing that you need to look at is this highlighted term here. As you see, the effective frequency squared is chiral, so different helicity state of the B particles have different effective frequencies. For one of them, the effective frequency squared is always positive, so it will act like a normal mode. However, for the plus helicity state, there is a minus sign here, and it can dominate over the other terms, so it can make the plus helicity state to have a phase of tachyonic instability. Yet after a while, because the mass term of the B particle is very large, eventually all of them will be dominated by the mass term, and both the helicity state will decay. Here in this plot, we have both B plus and B minus. B minus is the mode with the normal effective frequency, so it's just boring, the dark line. But the B plus is the one that can have this phase of tachyonic instability that I showed shaded. So in this area, it can have a tachyonic instability and then generate lots of B plus particles, but eventually it will also decay after horizon crossing, but it will decay to gravitational waves. That I will tell you later. So these are the amount of B particles that are generating before horizon crossing. And because, as you see, it exponentially related to this parameter delta C, it can actually back react to the background as well. And the back reaction is roughly of the order, of course, of the NB particles times the gauge coupling. And it sourced the gravitational waves. So now I showed the gravitational wave with this blue field, Hij. And this is the new field equation. The normal field equation is just the blue one. So the right-hand side is zero. And the solution is the unpolarized H vacuum one. This is just the vacuum fluctuations. Now that we have a gauge field that all... The psi over M Planck is basically the effective field value of the gauge field in the background. And then the pink term is actually a linear term coming from this B particle, and is highly chiral. So now on the top of the vacuum polarization, vacuum gravitational waves, also I have a source gravity waves, which are highly chiral and non-Gaussian.
Sorry, question. What is psi? You have a psi there, green.
Yes, psi is the background gauge field, so it's this color.
Q or?
Yes, it's...
Oh, that's psi. Okay.
Yeah.
And how come H doesn't appear in the B equation? Because you would think that if B appears in the H equation, H should appear in the A, right?
That's a very good question. Actually, it does. The thing is that the structure, the way that the H, the gravity waves, also source the the B field, but the structure is something like this. So it's like it is proportional to psi over m Planck and linear to h. The point is that h never gets that large. It doesn't have this tachyonic instability, so it's always small. And this prefactor is quite small. The reason that B sourcing h is important is because of the tachyonic instability. Now we can compute the ratio of the power spectrum of the source over the vacuum part of the gravitational waves. And as you may guess, it is proportional to psi over m Planck squared, the green term, which is the roughly the energy scale in the background gauge field, and times the number density of the B particles. And of course, I have to make it dimensionless because it has a dimension of the h squared. And as a result, now I have tensor power spectrum, which is not entirely specified by the scale of inflation, because I have new scales, and that's the energy scale of the background gauge field. And also, the tensor to scalar ratio can be large without the need of a large field, because it's not exactly related to the scale of inflation. I have extra scales. And the tensor power spectrum is partially chiral because of the extra spin 2 field. And as a result, it predicts parity odd correlations on CMB, like non-zero TB and EB. And because of the interactions, so now the gravitational waves on the top of the normal non-Gaussian interactions of the GR, which is small, they have interactions with the extra spin 2, and it makes it non-Gaussian. And as a result, we have a chiral non-Gaussian primordial gravity wave, which can act like a fingerprint of these gauge fields if they were around in the physics of inflation. And then, of course, because the production of this extra spin 2 can be really large, it can also background back react on the background as well. So it puts a constraint on the ratio of the power spectra of source to vacuum gravitational waves. And in fact, if you be careful with the back reaction, it means that the source part of gravity waves can be at most around or less than 5 the power spectrum of the vacuum part. So as I told you, now the primordial tensor perturbations are non-Gaussian, and the structure is that the peak is in the equilateral shape, and it can be probed with future CMB missions like Lightbird. And it's not just CMB, because some of these models, not all of them, but some of them predicts blue-tilted gravitational waves. So even if the primordial signal is small, so light but miss them, on those specific models, they can still have a chance with laser interferometers like LISA and BBL. These are for the same model, but for the spectator axion SU2 model, but each line corresponds to different values of initial condition. Now it leads me to the other part of the particle production, which is about the dark scalar and dark fermions, which are charged under this SU2 gauge field. I can have a charged scalar field coupled to this gauge.
Yeah, that's a hockey stick.
So.
Yes, but you got a battery, but you can use this hockey
stick. How could I miss this? It's more fun. Yeah. So you can have charged scalar fields under this SU2 gauge field. And in case that you're wondering, the beast is here. And so I have this scalar fields. which are getting sourced by the background gauge field. So it can get generated because of the Schwinger particle production. Let me show you the Schwinger effect in the presence of an electric field in inflation. In case that you have an anisotropic U1 gauge field in physics of inflation, which of course you have to forget about specialized entropy, but it can generate the scalars for you due to the Schwinger effect. What is happening is quite intuitive, because the more you increase the value of the gauge field in the background, the more you will generate scalar particles. However, for the SU2, which is an isotropic field configuration, something interesting happened. At first I couldn't imagine that, and it sounds counterintuitive, but later I realized why it's happening. In case of the isotropic SU2 gauge field, which is the one that we are working with right now, the more you increase this parameter, which is roughly similar to the electric field in case of the normal electromagnetic field, the more you increase this parameter, the less you will produce particles. And the reason is that in this setup, once you turn on the electric field, you also have roughly an electric magnetic field, which has roughly the same value. So in this case, for example, in the normal Schwinger effect, it's only the electric field that produces particles. The magnetic field only contributes to the mass. Here, you have something that produces particles, which is the electric part, but the same thing also contributes to the mass term. So the more you increase the source term, the more that the gauge have an effective mass. So that's why it actually get decreased. And in that sense, so in this setup is more stable because you cannot generate a scalar Schwinger effect. The only down part is that you cannot change slides. Now, the next one is the one that I'm excited about. It's about the dark fermions. Now imagine that you have this Dirac fermion, which is charged under this background gauge field. So it can get generated during inflation. And also for a completeness, I also assume that it can be coupled with the axion itself. So it can also get generated by the background axion field as well. So the time, if I have a time-varying axion, it can also provide a source. And because now I have both P and CP violation, it can generate this massive fermions in physics of inflation. Otherwise, it would not be possible. So if I have a source that preserve parity, then you will see that I cannot generate fermions. So interestingly, during inflation, this generated dark fermions would have an almost constant energy density because they have a source with almost constant slow varying energy density that keeps sourcing them. But after inflation, the source will be decayed and disappeared, and as a result, they will leave to their normal life and they will act like normal particles.
Sorry, a question. So is this really just the last bit of inflation that's important for this, or is it the entire duration of inflation? Because you would think that particles are generated early on, it would be diluted. It's just the ones that are generated at the end of inflation are important. Or I guess that's my question. Is there sensitivity to entire history of inflation, or just the last or the end of it?
Well, interestingly, the energy density in this dark fermion doesn't care about the number of e-folds. What is matter is just the value of source of CP violation.
Right. So that source, what does that source depend on? Does it depend on
the
Hubble?
That's the gauge field and the axion. So because for generality, I added this extra effective interaction.
Right. So where is the is the background appearing there? Where does inflation come in here? I guess that's what I'm...
Yeah.
Oh, this a, so A mu depend, drives inflation, is that right? A, is that...
Yeah, so the, I have an A mu. Can I write some? Can I write?
Sure, yeah. Sure.
Okay. Yeah, so now there are two terms. Keep forgetting my own notation. Now I have this, background gauge field, A mu A T A. And this is basically the scale factor delta A I, because I'm in the temporal gauge. And this psi parameter, which is almost constant, and is parity odd. And also, I have another source for the fermions, which is this, effective interaction.
Right, so what I'm trying to understand is which part of inflation does affect here? Like, if I don't have inflation?
If you don't, the inflation itself doesn't make the, particle production happen. The point about inflation is that where it appeared is just the source term. I have an almost... so this guy is an almost constant quantity here times A, and that's basically acts like an almost constant electric field that source the fermions in Schrödinger effect. So it relates also in both the sort of square root of energy density of the gauge field in the background and of course, the gauge couple.
So, how does reheating happen here?
Yeah, oh. Where does it start? So, it gets sourced on, turned on at some point. So, that's the energy density, and you're saying it gets the equation of a state like Kosmoskov constant. Where is the initial?
Not this. It doesn't. So it's a very small fraction of the total density, and if I want to give you some intuitive impression, what is happening is that, so it's exactly similar to the gauge field itself. Normally, if the gauge field doesn't couple to the axion, it just decays like 1 over a to the 4. Now that I have this coupling between the gauge field and the axion have slow roll dynamics, if the its potential is strong enough, it just carry the gauge field with itself, and it gives an almost constant energy density to the gauge field. The same thing is happening here. But the thing is that these fermions are not quantum fluctuation. They are the things that are sourced by the gauge field. And the gauge field itself needs the axion to survive.
And how do you tune the value then? It's almost constant, like initial condition.
Tune which value in the background?
The rho of ds.
I guess it depends on psi and ga
or
something, isn't it? Is that the formula, like psi times ga or something like that? Psi dot, I guess. It must be psi dot times
ga. Yeah. It's a very small quantity. So it's super subleading comparing to the background. Unless, so I have a parameter psi a, which is ga psi over h. If this guy gets big, then, in fact, the energy density in the fermion can be as large as the slow roll suppressed corrections in the background. Otherwise, it would be super subleading. I will show you in the next plot what does that mean. So first of all, it just leads to a new non-thermal mechanism for generating massive fermions. And here I compare the possible contribution of this extra spin 2 charged scalar and dark fermions to the background to have some ideas how big they are. So this epsilon b is roughly the, so here we have it. There is this dimensionless quantity here. So the back reaction of the spin 2 particle, which I talked about at the first part of my talk, is this line here, which as you see is very large. So it has a huge contribution to the energy density. It can in principle do that. And the shaded area means that this area has been excluded because of this large contribution. The next contribution comes from the this heavy fermions, which is this orange line here. And as you see, they can only exclude a smaller part. And then the most small correction is just the charge scalar, which I told you about. So the main thing that we should be careful about is the back reaction of the spin 2 that can contribute to energy density and can change the background. Does that answer your question? Okay, summary. So SU2 gauge field can contribute to physics of inflation, and if they do, it means that two of the fundamental discrete symmetries of nature could have been violated during inflation. And as a result, we will have extra spin 2 particles that can source gravitational waves and make them partially chiral and non-Gaussian. And you can use it as a smoking gun for primordial SU2 in physics of inflation. And also, it can generate fermions during inflation, which otherwise would not be possible. Thank you very much.
So just before we take questions, we're going to have dinner at 6 in the bistro tonight, so everybody is welcome to join. So questions for us now? So maybe I'm going to start. Can you go back to that plot that you had, the last one that you showed? Yeah, this one. So there are two axes here. Does this mean that there are two free parameters in the model, or are there more free parameters? So you have a GA, and then there's a G. Is G different from GA, or the same?
Oh,
no. And the epsilon B has a G in it?
Oh, I'm so sorry. It's GA.
Okay, so they're just GA.
Yeah.
So GA and psi are the two free parameters, basically, right?
Exactly. Yeah, so if I want to give some intuition to that...
you can push up the...
Okay. It's wonderful. Okay, now for the sketch field here, if you compute the electric field, let's write it like this, it would be... roughly H A psi delta A I. And if you compute B I, which is sort of the magnetic field, it would be of this form, G psi squared. Let's make it dimensionless. Let's write it like this. FA0I is basically roughly IA psi delta AI, because this guy has a slow roll dynamic. But then FAIJ, which is sort of related to the AK, epsilon IJK, is G psi squared A squared. Epsilon A I J. Okay. So can define something like this. Let's write it this way. Be G A psi over H. Two. Yeah, so in that case, you will see that this combination is basically about the ratio between B and E. And why, for example, in this setup, you cannot just have the electric field if it's the isotropic SU2 with all this.
Thanks. Other questions? I guess maybe I can just follow up on this. So how about like other kind of standard things in inflation, like the amplitude of fluctuations and the tilt of the scalar mode? So those are like things that, you know, I guess the amplitude is 10 to the minus 5, the tilt is like 0.96. So what parameters in this gauge inflation model are fixed? I guess the different parameters.
That's actually a very good question. The thing is that the original model. So the original gauge inflation and chromonatural with this specific form of the cosine potential has been ruled out because they generate lots of gravitational waves. However, you can have, the story is that in the original chromonatural inflation, the potential is similar to the natural inflation. And we know that for natural inflation to work, you need an unnatural value of the action decay constant. What makes this sound more natural is this interaction with the axion acts like a friction, and instead, when because the potential is not flat enough and F is sub-Planckian, the energy from the axion, instead of going to the kinetic term, will go to this friction term and source the gauge field. And that's why the gauge field, the energy density of the gauge field is very large, so it generates lots of gravitational waves. You can fix this issue by assuming that the potential is not cosine potential, but a normal monodromy potential. So the potential, assume that the potential is flat enough, and you just turn on this extra gauge field. And then in that case, if the energy density in the gauge field is small, it won't change the spectral tilt in the scalar sector, but it will have this interesting contribution to gravitational waves. That's one realization. The others are, are still possible is if you turn on a mass for the gauge field, so there's this Higgs version of the setup, or you assume that the whole SU2 axion is a spectator setup, which can only source gravitational waves, and the main scalar contribution coming from the scalar inflation itself.
Okay, cool, thanks. Okay, so if there are no other questions, then let's thank Azad again. Thank you.